Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Let's bring in Ed Denmark, police chief in Harvard, Massachusetts, a suburb of Boston, far removed from Harvard, the school, and violent police incidents. But he's been watching over three decades with a sinking heart as he moved from an excited black rookie to a chief who called policing broken. And now he's working with researchers at George Mason University to develop a new way of training. And Chief Denmark, you've said after the Michael Brown shooting in Ferguson, cops were forced into bias training and that backfired. But you've had success. For instance, you took down posted stat sheets that you loved as a rookie that celebrated the highest arrest numbers. Why?
It takes and makes a game, so to speak, out of people's personal lives. I was trying to raise numbers in order to be viewed by my peers in a certain light, but I didn't understand or wasn't recognized the consequences that could have on people's real personal lives. You know, we are negatively impacting their potential to get a job, their ability to keep housing. To me, you know, just because someone violated a law doesn't always mean that criminal sanction is the best way to change the behavior. And it took me a long time to figure that out.
Yeah, but you know what many others in the policing world say to that. That's a social worker's job.
Well, see, I would push back on that and say, you know what, this is the mistake we've made throughout history. Policing is a social worker's job. It's a conglomeration of psychology, sociology, anthropology, biology, all of the things that make human beings human. And that's why, we're having such a hard time addressing it through training, is because we're not looking at the root causes of the behaviors of the officers in the field when they are confronted with situations.
Talk about what you're talking to George Mason about and training techniques so that there is some of this thinking that you talked about.
We're looking at things more from a conflict management, conflict resolution perspective. The folks down at George Mason have done some incredible work over in the Middle East in some conflict zones. I do some violent extremism prevention work in the Middle East and Africa as well. And the thought was, well, if we can bring peace to these other places that are war-torn, what lessons learned from those areas can we take and front-load that into our police officers before they even go into the field? And I'm also a use of force instructor and all of the, so I'm not just the soft, touchy-feely instructor, but I want people to recognize that when force is used, we play a role in that. And that's not saying it's our fault. Certain neighborhoods, certain ethnic groups, when we show up, before we even step out of the car, there's a conflict, and that conflict is based in history and experiences and shared stories from within those communities. So we have to be mindful of what we bring to the table in conflict if we're to be expected to mitigate conflict or minimize escalation of force.
I'm sure you've had people say to you, easy for you to say in lovely, leafy, sleepy Harvard, Mass, you don't face the challenges of an inner city. What do you say to that, to the cop who says, I got a wife and kids I need to go home to, and that's all that matters?
That's the point of this, is like human behavior is human behavior, and we still have drugs, we still have domestic violence, we still have all the social problems that other places of larger populations have. When I say I want to go home to my wife and children, my response to them is, I'm looking to create a safer space for you as the officer. If we are more mindful of what we're doing, we can put ourselves in a position to better recognize when we are losing our abilities to think straight. Because under stress, and especially in a survival mode, our cognitive abilities can be reduced by up to 50%. So we start making bad decisions. And I always say to them, you know, nobody wants to be the cop that accidentally shoots the guy with the cell phone.
You've said you're hearing far more criticism of Derek Chauvin than you've ever heard before. Is it at least helping cops to see, I don't want to be Derek Chauvin?
I think it is. I think that the byproduct of this whole thing is the broken trust between the police and the communities. Officers don't understand why people of color look at them and say, well, that could be me. Mm-hmm. And whether or not the statistics back that notion up or not is irrelevant, because the feeling and the emotion of that is real. And also the pain on the face of some of my officers. I mean, I've one of the best cops I've ever had in my entire life, really feeling badly about everything the way things happened last summer, and really looked looked disturbed, and I asked the officer, said, what's the problem? And the officer said to me that, you know, I'm tired of people judging me for what I chose to do. And I said to the officer, I said, well, yeah, just think, you get to take that uniform off at 4 o'clock, and then no one knows what you do. You could take off the blue uniform, but I've worn the brown uniform for 53 years and don't get to take it off. And I said, you know, now you get a little taste of what it feels like to be judged just by what you look like or what group you're associated with. And it was a real learning moment for that officer.
What would the officer say?
The officer said, wow, I get it. I understand it's not the same, but I get it. I get what that feels like now.
Ed Denmark, police chief in Harvard, Massachusetts, a suburb of Boston. Chief Denmark, thank you. Best of luck to you.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.